Last week, if you were here, I know with all the hustle and bustle with a whole bunch of kids, I don't know if you were able to understand anything I was saying, but we were talking about joy, how life is better with Jesus, specifically because Christians have joy that the world does not have. World has happiness that is depending on circumstances, but Christians have joy that does not depend on our circumstances. And I gave you three reasons or three sources of that kind of joy. And number one, I said, our greatest problem has already been solved. What is our greatest problem? Death has already been solved by Jesus going to the cross and then coming back out of it resurrected. And the second reason is because our future is secure. We said Christians are not arrogant in saying that we already know that we are going to heaven after we die. Before we die, we can know that for sure. It's not because we have been good. It's not because we have kept the law better than other people. No, it's because somebody has substitute died for us, and we believe that person to be Jesus. And so because of that, our future is secure. We know that our names are written in the book of life, and we are going to be in heaven. That's the source of joy. And number three was that our suffering has a purpose. Our suffering, what we go through, the problems that we have shared, all those things have a purpose. They're not for naught. They're not meaningless. They're what God uses to mold us and shape us into the image that is fitting for the kingdom of God. And so even in our suffering, Paul says, we can rejoice. We can have joy. Okay? So today, though, we're going to look at peace as to why life is better with Jesus. Do you need peace in your life? Do you need peace? I think I do. This morning, things were not going well, last minute things, and we were trying to, oh, this is not good, and I'm thinking about my own message, right? And it's about peace, and I'm starting to lose my peace, but I got to think about where the source of peace really is, and I got to meditate on that. But I'm sure many of you sitting here this morning are thinking the same thing. You know, God, I need something in my life. I need peace. I need peace. Right? And so that's what we're going to talk about today. I know every beauty pageant contestant has to answer a question about how to bring about world peace. But of course, they sometimes have really funny answers, right? You can go on YouTube and listen to what they say about that. But Jesus Christ, we believe, to be the only one who has a valid answer for world peace. And not just only for world peace, because that has to do with one another, but also the peace within ourselves. I think that actually is what we need more than anything else. And when I said peace, do you need peace? Immediately, I bet you were thinking, I need peace within myself because there are fights going on. There's war going on within myself. I struggle with my self-esteem. I struggle with addiction. I struggle with sadness, depression, all these things. And I need peace from that, and that's what we're going to talk about today. So, outline today is, what is peace? Number two, why don't we have it? And number three, how do we get it? It's very similar to last week's outline. What is peace? Number one, peace here that Jesus talks about, my peace I give unto you. That peace is the Old Testament rendering of the word shalom. Does it sound familiar to you? Shalom, Jewish word. And it doesn't just mean peace, no fighting, no war. It means so much more than that. It means a total well-being, prosperity, and security associated with God's presence among people. And the pastoral picture of this shalom is depicted in the book of Isaiah. And some of you guys are familiar with this, especially if you had Jehovah's Witnesses come to your door. It goes like this: the wolf shall dwell with the lamb, and the leopard shall lie down with the young goat, and the calf and the lion and the fatted calf together, and the little child shall lead them. The cow and the bear shall graze, their young shall lie down together, and the lion shall eat straw like the ox. The nursing child shall play over the hole of the cobra, and the weaned child shall put his hand in the adder's den. They shall not hurt or destroy in all my holy mountain, for the earth shall be full of the knowledge of the Lord as the waters cover the sea. Imagine a world where your five-year-old child is playing outside all by herself, and you don't have a worry or a concern at all that somebody's going to come and do some harm to your little girl. And she can play out there all by herself all morning, afternoon, and evening, and you don't have a worry in the world for her. Imagine having no polices. Imagine not having any more courts, judges, lawyers, no more CNN or MSNBC reporting bad news. Imagine the land being so bountiful and fruitful that work is actually pleasure, that you enjoy going to work because it produces so bountifully, right? And it's not a nuisance. It is a restoration and the improving of the Garden of Eden. It is something that is written within that we all long for. Whether you knew it or not, when you're thinking about a paradise, right? As soon as Lupe said aloha, we thought, oh, you know, I want to be there, right? Hawaii. We envy that family. Why is that? Because it's written in our heart that we are longing for a home that we have lost, that we have a residue or a memory of this place where we came from, which is the Garden of Eden, which was perfect, which was peaceful with God as its landlord, right? And us as his children. And we have lost that, and ever since then, we want to go back to it. We long for that place, and somehow we are trying to recreate it here on earth, and we are unable to do so. Okay? So that peace is what we are longing for in everyone's heart. And that is what Jesus Christ has inaugurated. That's what he started to dispense while he was here on earth 2,000 years ago. But it's not quite here yet. It's here, but it's not completed yet. Jesus is going to come back the second time, and he's going to complete that process, right? But it is also here in a sense that it's here in the hearts and minds of those people who are believers of Jesus Christ. Those people whom Jesus Christ dwells in, within, these people have this kind of peace that Jesus said to them, saying, "My peace I give unto you. Peace to you, I give unto you, not as the world gives, but as I would give it." Okay? So there are at least three aspects of peace, and we're not going to spend too much time on them, but there's peace with God, there's peace with others, and there's peace with the self. The one that we are most interested in at this point is a peace with the self. Okay? That's what we're going to focus on today. Many, if not all of us, struggle with turmoil of some kind inside. On the outside, we all seem fine. And what do we say? Right? Guys, you know, "Hey, what's up, man?" Right? "Hey, how are you doing?" And the automatic answer is what? "Oh, I'm doing great. I'm doing fine." But if I were to really probe, if I could read your heart, read your mind, and ask you, "How are you really doing?" Oh, I would probably stand there for an hour, too, right? Listening to your stories, right? Listening to how things are not going right in your life. How your family is not going right, or how your job is not going right, or how you're not going right. All kinds of war going on inside. There's worry, there's anxiety, anger, jealousy, envy, low self-esteem, pride, addiction, suicidal thoughts. All these things are going on that we simply mask off. Every single one of us, right? Some of these things, or all of these things, are going on. So in other words, we are not at peace. We are not at peace with ourselves. We do not like who we are. We are discontented with ourselves, wrecked with guilt and shame. Wrecked with guilt and shame. How do I know that you're wrecked with guilt and shame? You try to compensate for it, for the lack of your wholeness. That's why you obsess over exercising or dieting. What you're really trying to do is, at least on the outside, you're trying to make it look right, make it seem right, like your life is in order. Because your internal, your inside is being destroyed. Right? Or you are distressed or distraught about getting old. Another gray hair, and it just breaks your heart. Wow. No, this is not going to happen, right? And you do whatever you can to try to prevent that from happening. Right? And it hurts you deeply when someone makes a comment about your outward look or your character flaw. Right? You can't stand it when somebody points it out to you, even though you know it in your heart. When somebody else points it out, you can't stand that. Why is that? Because you're wrecked with guilt and shame. You know, a lot of times, if you're healthy, when somebody touches you, you're fine. But if you're hurting, if your arm is broken, and somebody just taps it, it hurts like crazy, right? You scream. It's just like that. Because we're wrecked with guilt and shame, and we're not at peace with ourselves, when somebody points it out, just a small little thing, you overreact. Or you go berserk. That's an evidence that we are not at peace with one another. And of course, all of this will come out eventually, right? Because we are not at peace with ourselves, we are not at peace with other people around us. Here's a phrase that I come back to over and over. And when a couple is fighting or when best friends are breaking up or what have you, I always tell them this. I tell them to remember this phrase, and that is, hurt people hurt people. Right? People who are hurt will hurt other people. Why? Because they have this, so much anger and guilt and shame inside. The only way that can be dealt with is if they express it. They cannot contain it within themselves. And so it's going to come out. And usually it's not going to come out in a kind and gentle way. And so what happens to the person who normally is representing the most important relationship to that person? That person will hear that, and that person will hear this anger or this envy or what have you, and that person's gonna go off, right? Because he has also things that he's dealing with his own, and he doesn't have peace within himself, and somebody else is saying wrong things about that person, and what's he gonna do? He's gonna reciprocate, right? And go back and forth and back and forth. And you feel more guilty because now you have hurt another person who's not you. I mean, you're already feeling guilty about your own things, and now you have involved somebody else into it, and so you feel more guilty, right? And so what happens? You get even more mad, and it comes out even more. And so you see how it escalates, right? And how it becomes a vicious cycle. And you can never get out of it unless something from outside of both of you and yourself comes in and saves you. That problem we cannot deal with ourselves. Okay? But we have, and that's okay, we're going now onto the second point. Why don't we have peace? Okay, why where did it start in the beginning? Self-help books will tell us that it's because we have not learned to accept ourselves as we are. Hear that? We need to love ourselves and be ourselves. There's a website called wikihow.com, and if you Google it, how to have peace, that's usually the first thing that comes up, and it says 8 ways to have peace with yourself. And it's basically all the same. You need to love yourself. You need to accept yourself as yourself, right? Be yourself. You know, I still haven't found out what that means. Have you figured it out? Like, what does it mean to be yourself? I think what that means is, do not pretend to be somebody else, right? But if I'm pretending to be somebody else, right, isn't that still me trying to pretend to be somebody else, right? I mean, so what does being myself mean? I mean, what is that? I don't know. You know, I've never really actually figured out what that means. Does that mean I express whatever is feeling in my heart? That's being myself. Does that mean like being true to my feelings? If I'm feeling hurt, or if I feel like you're ugly, I tell you you're ugly. Or if I feel like, you know, you're less valuable than I am, then I tell you. I mean, is that being myself? What does it mean? I have yet to figure that out. And that's the way that the world tries to have some semblance of peace within. But the real problem is really the guilt and shame. See, we are wrecked with guilt about what we have done, and we feel ashamed about who we are that are causing our turmoil. I don't want to spend too much time on guilt and shame because I can spend a whole message on that, but I distinguish guilt and shame this way. Guilt is what you feel when you, in your mind, there is a moral law. There is this moral standard that you should have abide by, but you did not. Either you did not live up to it or you broke it. That's when you feel guilt. Right? Shame is you have this idea of who you should be. You have an ideal self-image that you want to live up to, but when you have not lived up to it, you feel shame. Another way of saying is this. Guilt is there's something that you have done wrong. Okay? Shame is you're just not right. Okay? You feel shame when you are just not, you don't measure up. Okay? And the guilt is you've not done right. you've done something wrong. So it's more deeds, and this is more being, guilt and shame. And we deal with this all the time within ourselves. Okay? And there is something that is in us that actually tells us if we are about to do something wrong, that shows that there is that moral standard that we have, whether you are a Christian or not. And it's called conscience. Right? Our conscience is pricked when we have done something wrong that we think we should not have done. And when somebody else finds out, we feel ashamed about that. Right? But the way the world tries to deal with guilt and shame that does not work is that we try to change the standard. Okay? Rather than changing us, we try to change the standard. It's kind of like a school board has a problem on its hand, and most of its students are failing, right? They're failing the standard test. And so rather than raising the level of the students so that they can pass the standard, what do? They lower the standard. Right? Maybe this is too hard for them. Maybe this is not at the level that they should be performing. So we're going to lower the standard so that everyone basically passes. And that's exactly what we do with our conscience. People have these guilty feelings and shameful feelings about themselves. And rather than changing themselves so that they would meet up to these standards, what they would do is they would either lower the standard or they would act like there are no standards at all. And that's why the saying, something like, well, what's right for you is right for you, what's right for me is right for me, comes in from. Because if you do that, then there is no standard. You can't impose your view on me, right? You can't tell me what's right and what's wrong. I determine for myself what's right and what's wrong. What are we doing? We're simply getting rid of the standard altogether so that we don't feel guilt and shame about anything at all. We're trying to get rid of this feeling that is within, that is this warring against ourselves, and that makes us lose our peace. And to do that, we try to get rid of the standard. Does it work? It doesn't. It doesn't work. Because that conscience was put there by a loving God for our own good, to protect us, right? To protect us from harm. And it doesn't work trying to put that out. Let me ask you, with all the human efforts, all the self-help books, right, that you can buy at Barnes & Noble bookstore, rows and rows, has it worked, you think? Are we more at peace with ourselves than our parents' generation? Are we kinder and gentler to each other than the older generation? Absolutely not. Are our marriages happier and more solid than our parents' generation? Nope. Are we more accepting of others than the generation that have gone before us? In some aspects, but not in other aspects. Right? So, the world's way has not worked. Well, how can we have it? How can we have that peace that passes all understanding and all circumstances? Number three. You see, the reason why we have this conscience that tells us of some kind of standard is because God is loving and gracious, and He has built it into us. Romans chapter 2, verse 14 says this, "For when Gentiles," that's non-Jews, that's us, right, "who do not have the law by nature do what the law requires, they are a law to themselves, even though they do not have the law." Listen to this. "They show that the work of the law is written on their hearts, while their conscience also bears witness, and their conflicting thoughts accuse or even excuse them." So God has put that law inside of us. It's called a conscience. And if you break the law, then something tells us, you're not supposed to do that because it's going to end up harming you. Don't do that. Don't do that. It's a warning system. It's a warning system to warn us not to destroy ourselves, because God loves us. He has built it into us. And how is God going to deal with us? Okay, I'm sorry, I'm skipping ahead. That's a little bit later on. But it's just like the way we try to deal with it is, the world tries to deal with it is, you know, like on your dashboard, warning signal comes up, right? Check engine. You put a black tape over it. It's like, I don't like that You know, you're going to ignore it. It will go away, right? And if you do that long enough, what happens? You'll have a big problem on your hand, right? A lot of times that's what we do. Our conscience is pricking us, right? This is not right. You should not go there. You should not do that. And then we ignore, and after a while we become numb. We don't feel it anymore. And then we run into a huge problem that we see all around us. Right? Our educational system is failing. Our marriages are being redefined. Human worth is being debated. I just read an article the other day that somebody is debating whether monkeys should have the same rights as humans. Right? If you kill a monkey, shouldn't you also be considered for death penalty? Because what makes a monkey worth less than a human being? So that's being debated. Drug problems, sexual immorality, families breaking up, social security running out because nobody's taking responsibility and everybody's consuming. We have all these problems. Why? Because we have ignored the warning that has come up, that God has put there via our conscience. And you know, we can't solve this problem. We cannot solve this problem on our own because we are the problem. We are the problem. We are like mud people who are made out of mud, inside and out, and not understanding why a porcelain cup that he is holding is getting dirty. Right? And the more he tries to wipe and try to clean it, what happens? The dirtier it gets. And that's exactly what we try to do when we try to clean ourselves through self-help or self-guide or whatever. The more we try, the dirtier we seem to get, because problem is us. It is embedded in us. Something fundamental has to change about it. And we cannot be the ones, right? Mud people cannot clean themselves unless they disappear. The only way that's going to change if somebody from outside comes in and change. We need help. Right? We need a Savior. And that's when Jesus says, "Peace I leave with you. My peace I give to you. Not as the world gives do I give to you. Let not your hearts be troubled, neither let them be afraid." Realize the context in which this was said. Okay, this is John 14. The day after this, Jesus goes to the cross. Okay, this is his last night that he spends on earth with his disciples. He knows the next day he's going to be taken to the cross, and he's going to die the most horrible death that mankind has ever known on the cross. Okay? And he is saying, "My peace I give unto you. I'm at perfect peace, even though I know that I'm going to die, even though I know that you're all going to betray me, right? You're all going to deny having even known me. I know that. And my Father's going to abandon me for a moment. I know that, but I have perfect peace, and I am going to give it to you." And how was Jesus going to do that? He was going to do that by taking on the source of peace, destroyer, head on. It's exactly the opposite of the way that the world does it. The way they try to create peace is by staying as far away from the source of disturbance as possible. And what is the greatest source of this disturbance? Death, isn't it? Right? As soon as you think about death, I mean, you know, all our peace goes away, right? I mean, you are loving your children, and they're playing and all of that, and you're so happy, and then imagine losing them, right? What if something happens to them? You immediately lose your peace. So death, let's think about that. Rather than staying as far away from death as possible, Jesus actually takes it head on, right? Experiences it in order to beat it. And that's exactly what Easter is. He had to experience it. He had to go through with it in order for him to come out on top and beat it. And that's what the Resurrection Sunday was all about. But the way the world does it, tries to do it, is to stay away, as far away, and not to think about it at all, right? How many infomercials are there that makes a 50-year-old look like a 30-year-old? Right? How many diets to keep the body looking young? How many surgeries? How many miracle vitamin pills, right? How many tea extracts, miracle juicers, to keep us as far away from getting old and dying as possible? What about insurance? Imagine how many different insurance policies are there. What are we really doing? I want a guarantee that this life that I'm living right now will be extended as far and as long as it can. Because I don't want to think about death. I know it's coming, but I don't want to think about that. I just want to keep up the life that I'm having as long as possible. But does it work? Right? It's inevitable that it is coming. We can't solve it. Death is coming. That is the philosophy's greatest problem. But the Bible has an answer for that. It's the reason why we deal with it in that way is because death is not natural. You realize that it wasn't in God's original plan, right? Adam and Eve was supposed to never die. They were supposed to live there with God forever and ever in the Garden of Eden. But sin entered, and death entered with it. And death is a reminder that the sin has entered. Because the only reason why death exists is because sin exists. And what makes heaven heaven is that there is no sin, and that is why there is no death. So whenever you go to a funeral, whenever you hear a news about students dying or what have you, think, this is caused by sin. And that same sin dwells within me. And there is nothing I can do about it. I have to rely on somebody else to take care and deal with this sin problem. Okay? And that is what Jesus is telling the disciples that he is about to do. He is telling them that this, before it happens, that it's going to happen so that when it happens, the disciples will have no doubt that it was Jesus who planned it from the beginning to the end. That it was Jesus. It is Jesus who is truly the Son of God, who is sovereign, who is in control over all things. Listen, I'm done. Christianity is not about avoiding death. It's not even delaying it as long as possible with proper diets and healthy living habits. We should, yes, follow healthy regimens, right? We should take care of our body. We should be good stewards of our bodies, yes. But that's not the main thing, is what I'm saying. Main thing is being rightly related with God, who is the giver of peace, who is the destroyer of all peace-disturbing matter, which is death, and makes us one with God, where there is perfect peace. That's what Christian life is about. And so let me leave with you this one question that it's a three-word question that I can say changed my life about 3 years ago. I want you to think about this question if you're a Christian and try to answer it, okay, before today is over. If you're not a Christian, then I want you to put yourself in the shoe of a Christian, right? And then if the answer to that question is yes, how would my life change? Right? Especially regarding peace. And that question is this. Is Jesus enough? Is Jesus enough? Christians, if Jesus isn't enough, what is it that you really, really want? That you are using Jesus to get. That is your God. Jesus isn't your God. That which you want really, really, more than or beside, aside from Jesus, is your God. Let me ask you, can that truly satisfy you? Right? If you're not a Christian, what if you could truly say, Jesus, the maker of heaven and earth, through whom everything was made. Right? The Father made it through him. And the one who came and died in my place, that loved me so much, that made all the beautiful things of this world, including your children. I have him. What else do I need? I have him already. That's all I need. Imagine if that were you. Imagine what would happen to your heart. Imagine what would happen to your peace. What could disturb it? What could disrupt it? Nothing. Right? Nothing, right? You will have perfect peace. And that's exactly what Jesus had with his Father. Let's pray.